So the point is, driving is not enough. And I have already gone through the different parts of the meditation. And even though I have said a few times that when we do the samatha, the calm meditation, the insight meditation always goes along with it. Maybe the insight will always be doing peaceful meditation. And whenever you are doing either of those, always doing loving kindness as well. But in particular, today I would want to focus just on that aspect of this one, the holy meditation path, the natural path, and on the insight aspect of this path. And one of those aspects of insight is the insight on how to meditate. This understanding, what makes the mind calm and clear, so insight, wisdom can actually arise. And first of all, I have made the very strong statement that wisdom does not come to thinking, so wisdom comes from something totally different than thinking, from stillness. We have a couple of little quote books, which we have now, called The Wisdom Forms of Silence. And it's very powerful to know that this is silence, the stillness of the mind, which is where insights arise from. They come from stillness. Already mentioned that the stimuli of a lake in the mountains, and when there are waves on the surface of the lake, and you cannot see an accurate reflection of the heavens above. At night time you can't see a clear image of the moon, because the waves on the surface of the lake distort the image. And that's an accurate simile to what happens with thinking. Thinking distorts the truth. It doesn't actually reveal the truth. Which is one of the reasons why people argue so much. Because they think too much, and we all have our own distortions of what the truth is. So, the goal of meditation is to have enough silence, enough stillness, so that we can actually understand things. What we understand, first of all, is how to develop more stillness. So we can get more insight. We can get more stillness. So we can build on this path of insight leading to calm, calm leading to insight, leading to more calm, leading to more insight. And that's partly the path of meditation. But in order to become still, one of the insights which I hope you will see for yourself, which is one of these counterintuitive insights, is you don't get still by using willpower. Your willpower doesn't make it at all. And unfortunately, that's one of the mistakes which many, many people do with meditation. They try and make their mind still. You can go to a certain degree of stillness by your effort, but all you really ever learn how to do is the same attainment as the horse guards in front of Buckingham Palace. If you've ever gone to see those toy soldiers, they can stand absolutely motionless for 1 hour, where people take photographs of them and try and poke them and try and get some sort of response from them. And they stand absolutely still, but they're training. They're soldiers. They're by Buckingham Palace. Well, that's not no stillness. That's how they're by force. So I've never known any of those soldiers ever getting items. So that's just using force holding. And you can do that. You can do that for a while. And after that time, you get so tense, so stressed out, and there's no happiness at all in the meditation. It's just hard, hard, hard work. And of course, some retreats are like that, which means you come, and then you don't come back again. Hopefully, at the end of this retreat, you think, wow, it's a wonderful time, I can't wait for the next one. And if that's the case, this one's been a success. So you don't use force. So what else could you use to become calm and still? You use wisdom, insights, understanding why is the mind restless? Why is it still? And the answer is so obvious. The Buddha taught that again and again and again. More noble second noble truth is craving, desire, wanting is a cause of suffering. Letting go of craving, of wanting is a cause of nirvana, happiness. It's a path. So what does that mean when it gets to understanding how to meditate? The way this works is I like telling people there are two types of meditation which people practice, and I do not mean samatha vipassana. I mean something different when I say the two types of meditation. They are second noble truth type meditation and third noble truth type meditation. What do I mean by that? Second noble truth? Wanting is a cause of suffering. And how many of you have been practicing that type of meditation? You want something. Especially when I come along and talk about limiters, blissing out, and chance. Wow, sometimes you wonder, can I take so much pleasure? And people get very attracted to that. Which means they want it, they desire it. And many of you in your interviews have come to tell me of these experiences you've had, either in the past or the first day of the retreat or something. Beautiful, peaceful, wonderful experiences that you can't get it back again. Why? Wanting is a cause of suffering. And those people who are waiting, we've been meditating for years, and you hear these people say about meditators and these guys with tattoos getting jhana, that really is unfair. I've been coming to the BGF for years, I've been going to every retreat, giving donations, I've never got anything. But you can see that if you are disappointed, frustrated, unhappy after your meditation, the only reason is you have been doing second noble truth type meditation. You wanted something. That is why you suffered. Simple as that. Third noble truth meditation. Letting go of wanting leads to the mark. So any time you have a very good meditation, you're happy afterwards, congratulations. You have done third noble truth type meditation. You haven't been wanting anything. All of you who have had interesting, deep, wonderful meditations, it all came unexpected. Why did that happen just now? I wasn't really trying as hard as this morning, but it just happened. Out of the blue. It is the was. You were wanting anything. You are practicing third noble truth meditation. Not wanting. Contentment. One of the sayings in my book was, when you want something more, you cannot enjoy what you already have. So this is the problem. So join the meditation. If you want something more, what more do you want? Is this not good enough? Which brings me on to one of my favourite stories about the difference between freedom and being in a prison. Are you free today, or are you in a prison? I will now explain the difference. And it all came about from when one of the monks in my monastery went to teach in a prison. And after teaching in the prisoners asked him, please can you stay back for an extra half an hour? We've got you a cup of tea, some cheese, and chocolate. They found out what that's like. And they wanted to find out, ask some questions. In particular, they wanted to find out, how does a monk live in Australia? What do you do? So the monk started off by describing the day, an average day in Bodhi Garden Monastery where I live. He said, we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, he started. And saying that, the prisoners were aghast, they were shocked. 4 o'clock in the morning? Even criminals don't have to get up. What bad cup was it you must do? And then he carried on by saying, well, what do you do afterwards? Can you watch the TV? The late night movie? Said, no, we don't have a television in the monastery. We get up and meditate. Said, oh yeah, okay, you're right, meditate. Makes sense. Then what do you have for breakfast? Now when I come here, you see the breakfast I have here, that's way, way above what I get in the monastery. In monastery, what I get, ask the other monks, it's just porridge. And a cup of this size, a cup of tea, and that's it. Not like this morning. This morning, we had pancakes, bacon and eggs, fruit, and all sorts of other stuff, omelets. Forget how much, which is too much there to remember. And they were shocked. Wow, in prison in Australia, if you want vegetarian food, you get vegetarian breakfast, vegan breakfast, you get sausages, whatever you want. Try to get dumplings if you want. So, and that's what? So what do you do after breakfast? And that's when he described how hard we work physically. Many of you have been to that monastery, you've seen everybody who do our chores. You can be anything from mixing concrete, to building a hut, to sweeping the grounds, and you work quite hard. Even I work hard. Even, well, it's very difficult these days, because now I know how to build, so I know how to do stuff. So the last time I went on top of a roof to fix up some plumbing on top of the roof, someone took a photograph of me, sent it to my committee, so they could ban me, Ajahn Brahm, you're too valuable. If you fall off a roof, who's going to teach us? You're back. I like doing a bit of work, and it gets a bit of help, fitness. Now what I'm reading, I don't know why, it's a boy thing, concrete, mixing up cement. I love doing that. You get really dirty, cement all over the splashing, putting in the sand, shoving the sand, shoving the cement, turning out the concrete, pouring it out, pushing the wheelbarrows up and down. Oh, that's really good fun. I love that. Must be weird, but anyway, that's what I like. So, one morning, we're mixing concrete to do some building somewhere, and then I went back to my hut to take a shower and ready for lunch. Ah, on the way to my hut, before I had a shower, I met this Sri Lankan lady. Now, not an ordinary Sri Lankan girl, because she was really dressed up like she was going to see the Queen. Really expensive sari, lots of makeup, and the worst thing was all those bangles. And honestly, that's what I learned, that when you learn, have lots of bangles, because I heard her coming from a distance, and I thought it was the ice cream bag. If you girls weren't in many of us, that's what it sounds like to a guy. So, she came up to me, because I'm very well known in Sri Lanka. And she said, I've come to see Ajahn Brahm. Do you know where Ajahn Brahm is? Now, I don't lie, I can't lie to her. But I was very quick and said to her, well, if you go down to the hall over there, he'd probably be down there in about a quarter of an hour. That's not lying. It's true. I had a shower, changed my robe, and I was down there in the corner of nature. Telling the truth. And then I went to see her, and we had a nice talk about Dharma. And afterwards, after a quarter of an hour, I said, well, thank you so much, I have to go now. And I'm really impressed. I've always heard about you and the wonderful monastery. It's incredible, it's beautiful, except for one thing, she said. So, no, well, really, I should tell you this, because on the way here, I met one of your monks. And he was really dirty and badly dressed. And that's really inappropriate in a monastery such as this. You should tell your monks to be more clean at better dress. And she therefore knew me, not at all. And again, I'm honest, I said, oh, really, man? Yes, I'll talk to him about it later. Which I did. So that's an example. We do work very hard. And I said, well, what do you have for lunch? And again, when I'm in monastery, I eat out of a bowl. The reason I don't bring a bowl to here over to Kuala Lumpur, because after here you go to Penang and then you go to Singapore. And sometimes those bowls, they don't allow you to take them on board the aircraft. No, one mark. He said, yeah, you can't take them on. I said, why not? It's a weapon. Anyway, you know, you think you've got tables in, so I don't really use it. But in monastery, every day, everything goes in the bowl. Everything. And it happened many times. Over your curry. Goes last week. I was having some curry, now I must, it was not spaghetti bolognese, the last thing which I had, which was really interesting, was strawberry ice cream on top of spaghetti bolognese. Have you ever had that? Wow! You haven't lived until you've had the fusion of no, don't do it. It's disgusting. It's terrible. Well, that's what happens when you try to separate things. But you know, it's very small, but it goes all over the place. So you have some really interesting combinations. When he told the prisoners this, the prisoners said, that's disgusting. Even in solitary confinement, the really bad criminals, they have little sets of compartments on the metal trays. They don't do it. I thought, okay, what do you do after lunch? Do you play sports? I said, no, we don't play sports, Max. We don't play soccer. We don't play basketball. And if you haven't heard this before, why? Why don't Max play soccer? It would be very easy for us because apparently this is accurate. He could kick a ball, he could bend it all over the place. The last psychic power, he could bend it far better than that. It's easy to score points. But, we don't do that because we're Buddhists. Number one, we're compassionate. We don't want the other team to suffer by winning. So we always lose out of kindness to the other. If the other team wanted the ball, let go. I always notice in the ladies and Singapore they never get anywhere with soccer. And that's the reason, too many Buddhists in your team. You're too kind, let go. Don't run, do it mindfully to go to the car. So that's why we don't play sport. How are we meditating in the afternoon? Or studying? Oh, okay. What time do you have dinner? Said the prisoners. Dinner, we don't have dinner. In months. Cup of tea, maybe. Ah, you should see the dinners which we have here in town. Anything you want, really high class. So what do you do after your cup of tea? You know, can you play cards? Can you get a poker? No, we just meditate. That happened, that's when one of the prisoners asked him, like, when you ever get fed up with meditating? And the man was honest, yes. Same with you, sometimes I'm going to drink. Oh, I'm not going to medicine. But it's good, you never mind, you get to do that much. So, what time are you going to bed? They asked. Bed? They asked, we don't have beds in monasteries, we sit on the floor. Oh, business, never ever expected about in modern day Australia that people could live like that. Very austere living in a Buddhist monastery. And one of those prisoners, forgetting where they were and who they were talking to, said to this monk, who they liked. He said to him, with great kindness, it's terrible living in your monastery. Why don't you come in here and stay with us? And they had a point. It's much more comfortable. He said, you're coming to monastery soon, so toughen up. It's not that bad. But when he came back and told us, we all had a great laugh. A monk being invited to a modern prison, just to have a much more comfortable life. And it's true. Prisons are in Australia far more comfortable than monasteries. So why is it? There's a huge waiting list of people trying to come into our monastery. How have you been waiting for that, Jaga? 2 years now. He's finally got his place in February. Yay! Wow, he had to wait such a long time. How long do you have to wait to go to prison? Now, waiting is to get out, yes, but not to get in. So what's the difference between being in prison and being in a monastery? And so I thought, insights. One thing is to know, it's a great insight and understanding. Meditation is just another little story. People like being in a monastery. They want to be there. That's why in a monastery they feel so free. In a prison, it does not matter how comfortable you make it. Even if in every cell you're plotting Fox Channel, 64 channels, I don't know how many channels, 120 channels in every prison cell, still people will not be happy to be there. That's why it's called a prison. Any place you don't want to be, it's called prison. Even if you're fed up with being here on this retreat and you can't wait to get out, how many more days to go? How many more hours? How many more minutes? Then this place becomes a prison. Bars on the windows, you can't get out, you can't do this. If you don't want to be here, you turn this place into a prison. If you're in a job you hate, your job, your office is like a prison. If you are in a relationship, you have a lot of difficulties. You don't want to be there. Your relationship is another prison you've made. And for those of you getting old and sick, if you don't like being in your body is another prison you just made. And the question is, how to escape from the many prisons of suffering in your life? You don't have to leave this place. You don't have to change your partner, change your job, or even heal your body. You change your attitude from I don't want to be here to I want to be here. It doesn't matter how comfortable it is or uncomfortable, that's not the point. Monastery is more ascetic, more uncomfortable than the prison. The reason this awakening is there is because people want to be there. And the only reason it's a prison is because people don't want to be there. Do you want to be here? If you do, you are free. It doesn't have to be a perfect body. It can be sick, irritated, painful. If you want to be here, you are free. It doesn't have to be the perfect husband or perfect wife. They don't exist. We always think that maybe the one I got was 40, and I sat till 7. You're 41. So, surely there must be a recall for boys like that. It's not 40, they're all like that. The same as girls as well. All the same. different chassis, same engine. Get blondes, brunettes, tall girls, small girls, fat girls, thin girls. The chassis is different, but the engine, what makes them laugh? 30%. So no people got a faulty model, they're all like that. I'm a man, I've been married, I know that. It's not. So, if you want to be here, then you're free. When you're meditating, check, do you want to be here? Or do you want to be chance? Do you want to be dark? And if you're dark, are you happy to be dark? Or do you want to be alert? If you are watching the breath, are you happy to watch the breath? Or do you want images? Can you see how you make prisons for yourself all the time? So if you want to be free, and freedom is part of letting go, part of the path to enlightenment, if you want to be free, check yourself every now and again and ask yourself, am I happy to be here? Or do I want to be somewhere else? Even want to be in a good place, but still craving, that causes you to feel like you're in prison again and have to escape. You don't have to be enchanted, you don't have to have limiters, you don't have to use a really healthy body to be free. All you need is to want to be where you are right now. To want to be here. And then you feel this incredible freedom. Now, how can you actually practice this? Again, I am an innovative monk. You asked me the other day, I have to think a lot to be innovative in my business, in my way. Please know, there are incredible, beautiful ideas for me to help you in your meditation. Try this one. Next time you meditate, when you close your eyes, get yourself nice and comfortable. There's no 5 minutes just relaxing the body. Not now. When you close your eyes after 5 minutes, use your powers of imagination. Like role play. Many of you have done acting. Have you seen people like acting in plays with the BGF or with schools? You don't need to be some great actor to do this. You close your eyes and imagine role play that you are the Buddha. You are the Buddha meditating. How would that feel? What would it feel like to be Buddha? The eyes closed, meditating. You've done your job. There's nothing more to achieve. You don't have to want anything. You've got everything. You're enlightened. It's your last life. There's nothing more to do at all. You don't have to seek for wealth. You don't have to seek for fame. It's all there, done, finished with. You've achieved. You've arrived. You've got there. You've arrived, baby. You've arrived. That's what they say in Hollywood. You are, baby. You have. In your imaginary being the Buddha piety, the light of the Buddha sitting in your eyes. Wow. What that means is for a few seconds when you really get into that role, imagine you feel it. You can go with everything. You can't want anything. You're a Buddha. Or once it is finished, then you feel what it's like. They're happy to be here, nowhere else to go, nothing more to achieve. Wow. So you imagine that it really builds up peace, freedom, not needing anything more, and then you're way ahead when you turn into your normal type of meditation. You do that for 5 or 10 minutes. And after it's lying way ahead, and you can meditate so peacefully, so deeply too. It's just a big boost at the beginning of meditation by just using your powers of imagination, visualization, role play. And all of you can do that, some really well, some now you can meet in that, Everything else is a mean-muscled trick. Imagine you're good at it. Wow. Kids are great doing that. They're really into it. So, this is learning how to be here. Happy to be here instead of wanting to be somewhere else. You've got some insight now. Why effort is usually counterproductive. When you have effort, you want to be somewhere else. Struggling and striving, yearning, reaching for something else. Instead, after just being here for a while, being where you already are, and realizing this is more than good enough. This was one of the mantras which I learned from the Forest Monks in Thailand many years ago. It was not about just reading a putto putto, poor thee. Which means good enough. Good enough. Good enough. Good enough. That was a mantra to get into really deep meditations. Sometimes, even if you're good enough, you're not putting effort, you're not striving, you're not achieving anything, you're not going to get anywhere. You're just going to be stupid. Just like some dog who's just sleeping all day, not doing anything. It looks like that, but when you get inside into this, it's totally different. Because when you say good enough, you simply aren't good enough. Good enough becomes very peaceful and still. Good enough. You get energy. Good enough. Ooh. You get more energy. Wow, really good enough. More business. Wow, good enough. And it gets even more intense. Good enough. But it really takes off. Good enough. Wow. That really was the best good enough. It goes. And that's one of the reasons why good enough starts off with so ordinary, and it soon morphs into something you never ever expected. Incredible stillness, incredible peace. And that brings back to one of the other insights which you've all heard about, but how can you practice it? Anatta. Non-self. You know that, so you think. But one of the most wonderful little sayings in the Visuddhimagga is such a great saying. I use this powerfully in my own meditation and teach it to others. One whole range retreat. A whole range retreat was just on this one line. The main teaching of Bodhidharma Monastery. And that line was, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Amazing. No traveller on the Eightfold Path. So the second line is Nirvana is, but not the person who enters it. You have to vanish to get to Nirvana. And that becomes, that last saying, becomes a very beautiful loophole for me. Because I've been in monks a long time now, and I'm quite well known. I write all these books, and I talk about jhanas. I talk about psychic balance. I talk about stages of enlightenment. I've written books about it. So sometimes people come up, and they ask me, Ajahn, are you enlightened? You talk about these jhanas. Can you achieve these jhanas as your God? Or are you just making it up? Now, there is an important law, it's the eighth Pajitya. Monks can't tell lay people about that. We can't tell you about our stages of enlightenment. It's an important law. But you can tell other monks. So once this whole group of monks in Sri Lanka, maybe I was teaching a motion, maybe come up with it. อาจารย์บอก cannot use that loophole anymore. I was talking to Hans. Okay, อาจารย์บอก I'm not can't use those chances. So, what I said, and I said, I don't want to see you as well to let people. I have to be honest. I have to be truthful. Now the truth is, Ajahn Brahm can't enter a journal. Ajahn Brahm can't get invited. Are you disappointed in me? Have you lost your faith? You can ask your money back if you're about to follow up with someone. It's true, Ajahn Brahm. I can't get jealous. Ajahn Brahm has to vanish first. Me, not by me. And then the jhanas happen. Same with the enlightened experience. I have to disappear. I vanish. Ajahn Brahm can't get enlightened. Ajahn Brahm has to stay outside. Disappear for enlightenment to happen. I'm sorry, Victor. Victor Lee cannot get enlightened. When Victor Lee vanishes, wow, then that's nothing amazing. The path is that no traveler on it can see. Enlightenment is for none of us enlightens. All your senses and sound vanishes. The great art disappears. So what does that mean for your meditation practice? Stop controlling the meditation. Stop being the traveler. Be the passenger. Stop driving the car. Sit in the back and enjoy the journey. Stop doing stuff. Because when you don't do stuff, that is when the traveler disappears and vanishes. Have you ever got scared in your meditation? If you haven't yet, you soon will be. But when you do get scared, don't get overly scared. Remember, that's a beautiful sign. It's a sign you're about to go places you've never been before. You're about to break through to something new. Anything new is a little bit scary. Going to a new place, a new job, or just like the prisoner. It's about to be released tomorrow. He's been in jail for 30 years. No, listen, he's been in jail for 42 years. Where did that number 42 come from? He's not jail, I don't jail. Be the mark. 42 years tomorrow, he's going to be free from this prison. He's terrified. Scared. In fact, he does not want to be in prison. He's used to prison. Or like that other story of fear. And how many people in Indonesia here, by the way? Indonesians? If you're very good, because I just got an email from Hanukkah this morning, it says, hello to all the chachis. Nobody got that word for chachi. Because so that was one of the stories. Chachi is a little word. Because that was one of the stories in my first book that they liked it so much it became the title of the book, The World is Filthy Love. And that's a touching something case of anyway, you know, even recent. And anyway, so from that time on, you know, we call all my disciples in Indonesia all little chachi. Because the story based on something the Buddha said, you know, I adapted it. About the 2 monks. Who are best friends, went everywhere together, meditated together, and when they die, one of those monks goes being worn off in the handbells, and the other monk goes on bird karma, got reborn as a worm in a pile of cow shit. And that happens sometimes. Not all monks are pure, so if you're something wrong, and you got reborn as a worm in a pile of cow. Now his friend, up in heaven, enjoys the pleasures of of heaven and his recovering rewards. These guys are wondering, where's my best friend from? Where's he been reborn? And he has psychic powers as a heavenly being. So he searched all the heaven realms, couldn't find his friend anywhere. And so, he must have been reborn as a human being. Because human lives are really wonderful for achieving enlightenment. So, he left the human realm, searched everywhere, couldn't find his friend anywhere in the human realm. Oh my goodness. He must have been reborn as an animal. Checked at all the forests and jungles and some of the zoos as well to see if he was in those places. Couldn't find him anywhere. My goodness, not one of the lower animals. And looking in the realm of the lower animals, in the realm of the creepy crawlies, there he found his friend. Oh my goodness, my lord, he's been reborn. Reborn of the world in a pile of filthy cowdung. And I can't let that. I'm going to help my friend. Friendships go way beyond life and death, way beyond one life. If that's your best friend, you do anything to help them. But this heavenly being just appeared in front of this pile of stinky, smelly, dirty cowdung. He called out, hey woman, touching, come here. And his little head poked out of the cow button. Yes, what do you want? He said, there you are. You know, we were best friends for the years in our previous life. You know, when we were both monks. We did everything together. And now, you know, I've been able to have this wonderful head and go, and you, unfortunately, have been reborn in this kind of ship. I can help you. Come with me. I can take you to heaven. And the Lord said, wait a moment. This heaven you're talking about, describe it to me. Is there any ship up in heaven? Any cowdung? No! We don't have cowdung up in heaven. It's all pure and fragrant and beautiful. What are you talking about? Cowdung is fragrant. It is beautiful. It's my home. And I like it in here. It's warm. It's also my food. It's like living in a restaurant 24/7. I like it in here. And how much that flavor explained the beauties of heaven. That worm was attached to his pile of dung. He loved it. So what did the heavenly being do? The only way I can do this is to show him. Now, any person can come and say, gratitude. But the worm didn't want to go. And the worm was covered with this slimy dung, wriggling and writhing, because it's really slippy. He managed to escape from the heavenly being and go to the deepest part of the cavern. And this is how much people sacrifice to faith. This was a deva, a high being. Imagine like a king or a sultan, someone really high on, putting their hand into the cavern, right in there, searching for his friend. And when he actually found a friend, he pulled it out again. And the friend didn't want to go, escaped again. Many times he pulled it out, every time he escaped. How many years have I been coming here, Vincent? Every year, I'll just get you a little bit out, you can run a little bit. I like my song. That's a very wonderful song. I love that as well. Because you get attached to stuff, you won't let go. It's letting go is scary. But that's about it. Now take you a little bit further out of the sun. Images. Coming out, oh, God.
lights, powerful stuff, need big energy. Ooh, maybe not me. But I take that a little bit more, a little bit more. Chance. Ooh, not chance. Maybe give up. Actually, God says it's a danger, I might lose my hair. I don't want to let go of my hair. It doesn't work out, it knows where we are. So it is good every time, because you're going to greater and greater states of freedom. But have faith in the Buddha, confidence in the upright man, I care for you. I've got faith, I've known you many years. I'll put in my hand in the shitter. I don't mind getting dirty. And I'll do it again and again and again, because eventually you come out, hey, this is what holds you quite nice. Why did I want to stay in the ship? Why did I want to stay thinking, thinking, thinking? That's one of the biggest dumb parts. Thinking. But I like my thoughts. I like my fantasies. Even worry. I like worrying. If you didn't like worrying, you wouldn't go watching the news. I like worrying. You like dramas. If there's no dramas at home in your family, then you go watch Korean dramas. You've got enough family problems and politics going on. You don't need to watch somebody else's on TV. You crazy people. But I like drama. You like this shit, don't you? And it's not coming out. Okay. And then you just got a little bit extra. Give it a try. Be brave. Be courageous. Wow, it's so wonderful. Those thoughts go out of my head. So peaceful, so still. Beautiful lights. Let it go. You are just a feeling. That's what you're really afraid of. The reason why people get afraid of images come out incredibly powerful. You realize that you haven't got much power. You just have. That's what it's scary. It's like being in front of a big monster. Incredible powers. So that's what it's like being next to an elephant. Huge. But the elephant's always calm, peaceful. Limit is very friendly. You're saying you feel the power of that because you are famishing. These are things which you can't control. You know, you just let them be. So after a while, then you get even more disappeared. Your body vanished. That for many people the first time is incredibly scary.
I can't feel my hands!
Don't worry, they'll be there for you when you come out. No one's going to take them away. You're not going to come out of meditation with no hands. No one's going to teach them. Don't get scared. We keep precepts in. We keep adding them out. We don't take anyone's hands. And if you do lose them, you can always find another room in the second hand shop. Are you losing stuff? Brilliant. Actually, you lose the stuff, it's a bit scary, but you're safe. And so your body disappears. Oh wow. And how many people come up to me and say, oh, my breath is vanishing. Ah, I'm gonna die. I can't feel my breath. Because you don't breathe, that means you're dead. So no, you're not dead. You can't get rid of you that easy. So, you're not dead at all. Then they keep on saying, a few people say, well, what happens if they take me to funeral parlor? There it is, compassion, not even meditation. No, Marty, you are perfectly safe, as I said yesterday. But fear always comes up when we start to lose things. That is almost a sign, a definition of what fear is. About to let go of something you've been attached to. That's called fear. And you go past that. Let go of all these things. It was so incredibly free afterwards. You know, one of the greatest times of freedom I ever experienced in my life's life? When, after 5 years of basic training, you were asked to leave the lodge and just go walking. with everything you own on your back. And you know you see me traveling. I don't travel very much. It's a bag, that's all. So I trained over those years, being able to have just few things. Be able to survive so well, with few possessions. This was one of the best parts of my life. Everything I own, literally everything, was on my back and so light. I had no appointments. I had no schedules. No place I had to be. I just walked along the roads of Thailand, in the mountains, in the jungles. Didn't matter where I was going to go, just walking for fun. And I got to a place, had a mosquito net, an umbrella. Very easy to hang up from a tree, the mosquito net will protect you from the mosses. Meditate. Get the water from the rivers or lakes. And in the morning, find a village and just walk for arms. Didn't need any credit cards. My bowl was my credit card. There's very good food. Sometimes not nice food, but you have to keep it going. It's incredible freedom. Absolutely no money, no debts, no work, nothing to do, no place to be, no one expecting you, no one so trying to be. It was as close as you could possibly get as a human being to being like a bird. Flying from place to place. Heavenly crossroads. You can go left, right, straight ahead, or just turn back, go back where you started from. Absolute freedom. Wow. For many people, that's scary. Because you want a place. You want sort of a home. You want people. You want stuff. You mean they go all back. Wow. That is free. So, as you're meditating, practicing oneself means you allow things to vanish. All possessions, all things which you think are doing possessing, that all goes. The travel vanishes. The owner. You don't own your meditation. When you think you own your attainments, all of you who come up in the interviews, I had this experience, I had this experience, and I can't get it back again. Because you own that experience, you try to possess it. You can't have to let it go. As soon as it's changed, it's gone. You can't keep it. You let it go. And then more will come up. The more you hang on to your old experience, the more you're blocking in your new experiences. But when you let go, you don't want anything. It's totally free. You don't want anything, you're just happy to be here. And, wow, you are all I can produce. Not wanting anything, get so much peace and stillness. Everything you thought you'd get, you want him striving, comes to you when you stop wanting, when you stop striving. You get the insights into the second and third noble truths. How to meditate. How to be peaceful. Wanting, causing suffering. Letting go, causes freedom. Peace, stillness, environment. Wow. And you know when you do achieve, which you all will, I guarantee this. I won't give you a big guarantee with money back. This is my honesty. Understand that I'm every one of you can challenge. Eventually. Maybe not this far, but most of it. Simply because it's been planted in there. And you'll find you attain those things, you get those things, only when you let go. A lot. When I started teaching these jhanas, one of the first monks and teachers to start teaching this, and I often wondered, yeah, I can understand monks and nuns getting chance, but can they get a chance? I wondered that. In the time of the Buddha, they did. But these days, can it be done? And of course, lay people just like you, just like bikies, don't want anyone else, they did get a chance. And the first few times, they come up to me and I'd ask them, what did you do? What happened? describe it. Then when I heard they got challenged, I said, wow, that was a challenge, a real one. And apparently, somebody was reading a meditation book about samadhi, and they were ranking meditation teachers, jhana teachers, about under which teacher is easier to get your jhana approved. So if you have experience, you go to one teacher, he says, well, maybe I'll teach him now, and I'll be, oh, yes. Same experience that I'm lacking, like at universities, you know, how good you have to be to get a degree. So, a lead pen, yeah. And apparently, the bottom of the lead pen, there's only about 5 maximums there, the easiest to give you accreditation for jhana was by Hema. Her standards was not that high. And so if she said you had a jhana, other marks would say no. Second in the list was parmoxidra. To get confirmed having a jhana with parmox, really have to have some really, really good states. At the top of the league table, the hardest monk to get to get him to say, yes, that was a jhana. That's how far. I am the toughest examiner. So if you come to me and I say you've got a jhana, that's me, you know you have. I don't give it out easy. That's really funny, I thought. But anyway, so the first few people who came up and said, yeah, they get challenged, it was true. I asked them, what did you do this time, especially, that now you're at this jhana? The first few people all said the same thing. So much so that I never asked again. The first one, I said, well, yeah, it was a jhana. Well done, what did you do? He said, for the first time, I really let go. I really let go. The second person, the woman came up, what are you doing? I really let go. And the third one, I really let go. Here you go. But it was actually quite stunning that that was the main trick which they did to push them into the jhanas. Really let 100%. 99.99999%. Somebody said, okay, this is it. I'm going to get jhana now. I've got to leave you. I've got many things to do. Okay, come on, let go. Come on, really let go. Really let go. Come on. Well, that's not letting go. Oh, that's doing a business deal. I'm going to let go. I'll be giving jhana back. So you have to really let go. Tell you that. Which is what is Anatas all about. It's all about sort of being a traveller. A path of meditation. Being a passenger, not a traveller. See what happens. But again, you think that they let go of things that vanish. Your body vanishes. Your will vanishes. Fear vanishes, everything goes. You're a loser. You losers. I'm a loser. You lose so much, it's wonderful unless you have or free you are. You lose everything. All of your attainments, all the, you know that I got a great degree from Cambridge. Medical physics. Sometimes people discuss that stuff with me now. Quite frankly, I don't know what I'm talking about. I forgot most of it. Too long ago. Way too long ago. So what use was that? It's all gone. Sometimes things I remember from the sutras. Sometimes you just let it all go. You let all the words go and keep the meaning. You let all of the thoughts go. To keep the stillness. The empty stuff, the pure stuff, that is what we keep on the path of meditation. The path is that no traveller on it is seen. Ajahn Mahal can't get the jhanas. I let go
let go. Really let go of me. Who is meditating anyway? If there's anyone then meditating, in wasting your time. You vanish, disappear, and then meditation is the easiest thing in the world. The more you do, the more solid is your sense of self. Big egos are big achievements. Big achievements, I am Donald Trump. I live in a town with my name, Trump Town. Me, I live in a little cave. That's the difference. I don't achieve anything. I vanish. That is how to get the deepest of the meditations. Vanishing. Disappear. So beautiful. It's like out in the mountains. You just merge with the mist. And the mist clears, you're gone too. Just like looking in the still forest pool, you see the moon, and the moon vanishes, and then goes. So beautiful. To me, vanishing, emptiness, is the purest form of stillness, and the greatest freedom. When there's something there, it's an obstacle. And nothing is there. Total freedom. So this is how we use insight, especially insight into oneself. Okay. So be careful when you're meditating. Don't do the meditation. Let the meditation happen. Third stage in the practice, just get out of the way. And let the whole process take over. Which is one of the reasons why I mentioned that the beautiful breath, the delightful breath, is what we call the pivot quality meditation. Once you get that energy going up, then you can really let go. And enjoy this, whatever happens, perfectly safe, just go with the flow. Just let it happen, but don't interfere. Otherwise, that's when you come up and spoil it. And if you achieve anything, it's not you achieving anything, you just let go. Always happy to be here, because that's called freedom. Meditation is so easy, man. As long as you're happy to be here. You're here, you have to be somewhere. So be happy to be here. And from there, you go very deep. And, supposed to be at least, I don't know what the talk was on, but it was interesting, I enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. Okay, any questions or comments? Oops. Questions, comments, complaints? Yes.
Many people
in
they all imagine
their hair. No, many do. But some this current age is sometimes quite difficult, especially to join monastery. But they said, if you became a monk, where would you go? What monastery would you go to? Where could actually people understand what you're doing and why you're doing it? If you went to a temple in Malaysia, you'd probably have to go to work in the temple, or even if you're a bhikkhu, you can give chants and give talks, leave retreats, it's another form of work. So, if you did become like what I've seen many people do, once you get into deep states of meditation, they just change their lifestyle. Not necessarily with that, because I've got to be honest, I've tried really hard getting a lot of my energy to build a monastery while tracking up the number of people who really want to become monks. You can't keep up with it. The demand is too big. The difficulty of building monasteries is just too hard in our modern life. And so because of that, there's many people, and they live in almost like an in-between world with monks and lay people. Such a simple lifestyle, maybe just in a small apartment somewhere. It's amazing. In a small apartment, somewhere in chaos, it's more peaceful and less busy
and in a monastery or temple. Some of the monasteries and temples are simply museums. Just know here, up in the lobby here, just running around, people shouting around me. And sometimes a little apartment is like the concrete chapel. The forest monasteries of the high rises. I've often thought about that, thinking outside the box. You're going to build like the forest monastery in Singapore. How about getting a floor of a condo? Quiet, still. Little cells, little monks, walking meditation, people come, bringing food. You have much more solitude there. But exercise, walking meditation, of course. Even better to make it more environmentally friendly. It's like a big wall, big wheel. So when you're doing your walking meditation, you're generating electricity at the same time. You made the suggestion of one thing. So why not? Because the whole purpose in the old days of the forest was for solitude. It's hard to find solitude in the forest area. Most forests now are resorts, or it's aircraft overhead, cars not so long, not so far away. It's really hard to find remote places. Some of the best remote places are actually in the middle of the cities. You stay in there and no one knows you're there. Never bother you. It's an interesting idea. Because it's hard to build forest monasteries where trees are. But the meaning of actually a forest is Arania. Arania means not of the king, not of the realm. It was wilderness. It didn't mean a tree was there. It meant wilderness place. A place of solitude and peace and freedom. You'll sometimes wonder about just a forest, a mighty monastery in the middle of the city. High rise, quiet, peaceful, no apology. In my hand, little community of Jhana, Jhana temples. Like a monastery, but you know, without all of the ceremonies and rituals. Okay, another question coming up. This certainly is the case if you get into a Jhana. What I was really going to say, the insights which come from these Jhanas, they may just change the way you look at life. Turn you upside down, inside out. Real insights are not just some, oh, now I understand. Wow! How stupid have I been? I couldn't see it. Now, well, look at yourself. So when you really get real insights, you get the time of just knowing those states. You're one of the sayings of the Buddha. And when I first read this song, it just blew me away. For weeks, or practically years. When he said, in the first Dharma, said, the happiness, the taste of it, is Sambodhi Sukha. It is the taste of enlightenment. It's that happiness. And I thought, my goodness. Any of you who get a Dharma, you are tasting what enlightenment is like. It's not really enlightenment, it's a taste, it's a smell of it. You're really that close. So, what is enlightenment? What is nirvana? Yeah, people write books about that and argue about it, give lectures about it, but don't know what they're talking about. But if you've had a jhana, at least you have a smell, a sense. That's that idea. And the other thing that's really proven your way was in the Elephant's Footprint ceremony, where the Buddha said, someone looking for the Buddha, where can you find the Buddha? And it's from this, please excuse me, Victor, but the best place to go on pilgrimage is the four places where the Buddha lived. Who knows those four places where the Buddha lived? You know what? People say, look, where he was born. Oh, guy I was in Leiden, the dear Martin Salmar, when he gave his first sermon at Kusinau, he passed away. The four pilgrimage places, and I say, no. Those aren't the real four pilgrimage places. There you just see the world, the outside of the footprint. You don't actually see the footprint inside. If you want to sit where the Buddha sat and experience what the Buddha experienced, first dharma, second, third, fourth, then your mind is no different than the Buddha's mind. It's exactly the same. And you come out and you are giving up Buddha markers. Now, while you're inside those chambers, there's no difference at all. And you experience what the Buddha experienced. Literally sitting in the Buddha's abiding. And when you know that's possible, when you can do that, that's freaky. You're that close to what Buddhism really is. You're experiencing it, being it, deeply into it. So that's why these jhanas, they are massive. They will totally change how you look at Buddhism and life. And I'm sorry, it's too late for you now. You can't say, oh, this is too much for me. I've got lots of things to do. You know, I want to get married, I want to have kids, or whatever. Sorry, too late. You're going to get jhana sooner or later. So that's the powerful places to go to. And you can do it. So that's why on this retreat, I'll take a couple of you maybe later on, and take you, sit you down on the Buddha. And that's amazing. Wow. Now I'm going to come out after, you know, that was amazing. So you know how the Buddha felt. All great enlightened monks and nuns felt. And that's accessible to you. To be experienced every wise person for themselves. Catch a kind of to go with you me, each hour every morning. And you've done it, you've experienced something amazing. So anyway, And sometimes before someone asks a question, said, actually I've got an office where you're attached to those jhanas. Number one, I can't do the jhanas. I vanish when the jhanas happen. So you can't get attached when you're not there, when it happens. You can only get attached when there's a sense of self there. There's no sense of self in the jhanas. So that's why it's impossible to get attached. These are stages of letting go. But, they say, after you come out, then you long for them again. If you long for the jhanas again, you won't get them. It's too many of you already have longed for a nice days of meditation, and you find you can't achieve them. It's because you want them. Let go of all wanting, and they have it by themselves. Anyway, the Buddha said in Parsimonica Sutta, anyone who indulges in the jhanas, they can only expect four things. This is what happens if you indulge in the bliss of meditation. Four things. Streaming, much returning, not returning, to full enlightenment, which is what we are supposed to be doing. So if any monk now says, you're getting attached, you're indulging, yes, that's what we wanted us to do. Become enlightened. This is the path. Okay, I'll talk about something else. Yes. If you've only got two wholesome roots and three wholesome roots, look, we've got every type of unwholesome root possibly imaginable. We also, in our past, we also got every possible wholesome root in ourselves. We've got seeds of all the roots. Which ones do we cultivate and bring to fruition? Every human being's got great seeds of
violence and cruelty, but also incredible kindness and generosity as well. I see that in these monsters who put in jail for the rest of their life. They've got incredible, beautiful seeds inside of them. Just which ones will bring up? You've got great seeds of attachment, and also great seeds of letting go, liberality, generosity. We've got both inside of us, every one of us. So those roots we have, unwholesome roots, wholesome roots within us, I call them seeds. It depends which ones we water, which ones we cultivate, which ones actually come to fruition in us. So that's why we spend a lot of time forgiving, letting go, even forgetting about all the faults, all the bad roots we have. Let them go and cultivate good roots. Yeah, you've been really mean and nasty. Yeah, never mind, let that come. Instead, put all your energy in being kind and good and wonderful and peaceful and generous. So that's what we do. In our garden, we always have flowers and weeds. It depends on which ones we water. What works? If you keep focusing on the weeds in life, the weeds grow. Focus on flowers, flowers grow. We chop out the weeds. That's why focusing on the positive qualities, the wholesome qualities, and then they just grow and take over. So any human being, if angry you are, could become totally enlightened. If you could, then surely you can. Any serial killers here tonight? If you are, not yours and mine. So that was a thing. When I read that, when I researched under the knowledge, every human being has a possibility. Except to say, people kill their mother or father, you know, those are exceptions, but everyone else, you can do it. It's wonderful, encouraging to know. Another question before we go through this? Okay, so let's have a break now. Let's another 10 minutes, 10:30, I'll be 30, I think, interviews. And so we'll have a 30. And then, do you want to have a guided meditation too?
Yes.
Who doesn't? Okay. Okay, the point is going to do a guided meditation too. If you don't want a guided meditation, just go and meditate with someone else. Okay, so I'll see you at 2. And those are the interviews to see you again.